The headlines: Palestinian groups declare a strike in the besieged Gaza Strip in solidarity with the victims of Israel's latest brutalities in the occupied West Bank. Families of 9/11 victims call for the boycott of a golf tournament founded by Saudi Arabia. And a new poll shows U.S. President Joe Biden's approval rating has hit its lowest at 39% as Democrats brace for midterm elections. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Palestinian factions have declared a strike in the besieged Gaza Strip in solidarity with the victims of the latest Israeli brutalities in the occupied West Bank.
We call on the Palestinian youth in the West Bank and Gaza Strip to mobilize and demonstrate immediately and engage the enemy at all the confrontational fronts in support of our steadfast people in Al-Quds, Nablus, and all of the occupied West Bank.
Khaled al-Battash also called on Palestinians living in other countries to mobilize in front of Israeli embassies and denounce the regime's aggressions. He affirmed that the Palestinians have the right to resist the occupation. The statement said the strike in Gaza will continue until the end of Tuesday. The regime has recently stepped up its deadly crackdown across the occupied territories. Over 120 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank this year so far.
Thousands of mourners took to the streets of Nablus in the occupied West Bank to bid farewell to Palestinians killed by Israeli forces. Early Tuesday, clashes broke out between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces after regime forces conducted a raid in Nablus. Several Palestinians were killed in the raid. Among the victims was Wadi Hawah, a fighter for the newly formed resistance group Lion's Den. 21 other Palestinians were also wounded in the attack, some of them in critical condition.
Those Palestinian young men will not be defeated by the Israeli war machinery. The Israeli occupation will pay a high price for its crimes. The response will be in the field. The flag of Wadi Hawa and other martyrs will continue flying every day, and more Palestinian heroes will be born.
The Israeli army said it had carried out a vast operation with police and intelligence officers targeting a site used by the main operatives of the Lion's Den, describing it as a headquarters and a workshop for making weapons. Later on Tuesday, regime forces conducted another attack near Ramallah and killed one more Palestinian man. 19-year-old Qusay At-Tamimi was killed during a confrontation in the village of Nabi Saleh. Palestinian officials have condemned the raids as vicious and criminal, but they said such attacks will not break the will of the Palestinian people, who are adherent to resistance as their legitimate right.
Their attacks on Palestinians in Nablus and in Ramallah and in other places will not break the Palestinian will. It will not stop the Palestinian resistance. The Palestinians have understood very clearly that Israel understands only the language of force, and that's why they are ready to defend themselves and defend their rights.
All the Palestinians are in the same tunnel, facing the same atrocities, while the same war crimes are being committed all over the Palestinian territories. The Palestinians are unified through different forms of resistance.
Since the beginning of this year, over 130 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
The Israeli regime threatens to continue killing Palestinian resistance fighters under the pretext of battling terrorism. Palestinians, however, say they will remain steadfast in their resolve, stressing that the Israeli atrocities will not stop their resistance. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Iran has condemned the Israeli regime for spilling the blood of more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani highlighted the crimes and terrorism perpetrated by the regime forces in the occupied Palestinian territories. Kanani urged the international community to condemn and put an end to, quote, Israel's genocide in Palestine. He, however, praised Palestinians, especially the youth, for their resistance against the occupying regime. The spokesman also pointed out to some countries' double standards on the issue concerning human rights when it comes to Israel. He called the unconditional support of the apartheid regime by the West, the U.S., is unpopular and the most blatant example of human rights violation. Saudi Arabia has long been accused of having a direct role in September 11 attacks. Now, calls are growing in the United States to prevent a Saudi-sponsored golf tournament at a course belonging to former President Donald Trump. A campaign launched by family members of those who were killed in the 9/11 attacks has urged LIV Golf not to hold games. LIV Golf is a golf tour financed by Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, an advocacy group has called on Trump to cut ties with LIV. Another advocacy group has called the move painful and disappointing. Critics say the event amounts to, quote, sports washing by a country trying to improve its reputation amid growing criticism of its dire human rights record. 15 of the 19 hijackers on September 11, 2001, came from Saudi Arabia. The kingdom denies any role in the attacks. The incident killed nearly 3,000 people. U.S. President Joe Biden's public approval rating has been going down, and that is according to a new poll by Reuters ahead of the November midterm elections. The survey shows that only 39% of Americans are satisfied with Biden's performance. The two-day national poll indicates 1 percentage point drop from a week earlier. The latest polls show about a third of Americans see the economy as a principal problem facing the country. The respondents included both the Democrats and Republicans. With the midterm elections coming, the new figure is raising alarm as Democrats may lose control of the House of Representatives as well as the Senate. The United States is facing high inflation, with many families struggling to cover their expenses. Biden's popularity hit a record low of 36% in May and June. Despite two decades of American military presence in Africa on the pretext of combating extremism and terrorism, the security situation in the region is an absolute nightmare. Statistics show that U.S. arms and training have failed to contribute to their stated goal of reducing terrorism and militancy in Africa. The figures demonstrate that they have rather perpetrated and prepared the ground for persistent and thriving terrorism across the continent.
After 20 years of American deployment in Africa, the Pentagon has admitted that the area is getting worse. The Pentagon says the security environment has deteriorated and that violence has expanded in intensity and geographic reach. A report from the Pentagon's Africa Center for Strategic Studies has shown that militant attacks increased by 300% in Africa over the past decade. Violent events linked to militant groups have doubled since 2019. More than 6,200 violent events were attributed to terrorist groups in 2022, a 21% increase from the previous year. Almost 15,000 deaths were linked to the increase in terrorist-related activity. The West Sahel region and Somalia were the militancy hotspots, where nearly 95% of the attacks had been carried out since 2019. Extremist groups affiliated with Daesh and Al-Qaeda militants, such as Al-Shabaab, are mainly responsible for the attacks. In this regard, the Pentagon's African Command, or AFRICOM, whose area of responsibility covers all of Africa except Egypt, describes the duties of the force as promoting regional security, stability, and prosperity, while assisting to strengthen the security forces of allied nations. But it also admits AFRICOM will work to advance U.S. national interests on the continent. Both Somalia and the Sahel are actively hosting U.S. troops, and the U.S. now has some 30 military bases scattered across Africa.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump had ordered the military to pull out all its troops from Africa. However, the incumbent ordered the U.S. military to maintain a permanent presence in Africa. Last year, U.S. President Joe Biden authorized the deployment of hundreds of American troops to reestablish a persistent U.S. military presence. The U.S. maintains its military presence in Africa under the pretext of fighting terrorism, but human rights groups say civilians have been caught in the crossfire and casualties from U.S. airstrikes are higher than have been reported. Also, Washington does not have a good track record, even when it comes to delivering on its stated claims of fighting terrorism. Somalia is a perfect example of systematic American military failures across the continent. After two decades of deployments, drone strikes, and commando raids to fight al-Shabaab terrorists in the country, the militant group has proven resilient and is still able to carry out attacks in the country as well as neighboring states.
In recent years, there has been growing recognition that the U.S. is militarizing its foreign policy in Africa, especially following the establishment of the Africa Command in 2007. Years of U.S. military presence have only meant Washington getting involved in coups and the overthrow of several governments in Africa.
History has shown that the U.S. has brought instability and conflict to any region it has established a military foothold. Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and Libya have all been subject to U.S. interventions and are experiencing chaos as a result. In recent years, there has been growing recognition of the militarization of U.S. foreign policy in Africa, especially following the establishment of the Africa Command in 2007. Despite its years-long military presence in Africa, the U.S. has not only failed to combat extremists and terrorists, but has also been involved in coups and the overthrow of several governments. Since 2008, U.S.-trained African military officers have attempted at least 9 coups in 5 Western African countries. According to a report, 8 such coups, which took place in Burkina Faso, Guinea, Mali, and Mauritania in different years, were successful. The failed coup was in Gambia in 2014. Confirmation is reported from the U.S. Africa Command that several African military leaders who staged coups in their countries participated in AFRICOM's flintlock exercises. Since 2015, 5 coups have been carried out by military leaders who had previously participated in Special Operations Command Africa flintlock exercises. The U.S. Department of Defense claims that these exercises, which were first conducted in Africa in 2005, are intended to strengthen the capacity of African countries to fight terrorism. But are they? Despite their claims, Americans have only been harbingers of more coups and more instability in Africa.
At least one protester has been killed in Sudan as protesters poured into the streets in several cities to mark the country's coup anniversary. Thousands of protesters in Khartoum and its suburbs defied security restrictions and took to the streets. They demanded an end to the military rule. Sudanese people in other cities, including Omdurman, were also demonstrating and were killed. They were also on the streets. They called for a civil democratic Sudan. The government has responded to the demonstrations by limiting internet access. It has also ordered the closure of public institutions, schools, and businesses. Police say some protesters are armed and trained. Sudan's army chief, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has been in power since the coup last year. Civilian leaders have been arrested under his rule. And as the UK welcomes its 4th prime minister in just 4 years, many are now looking to the future and if a Rishi Sunak has what it takes to fix many issues with Britain's troubled economy. Robert Carter reports.
During his first speech as British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak used the occasion to issue a call for unity. Sunak must find a way to quickly unite not just a bitterly divided Conservative Party, but also a deeply troubled nation. However, he also issued warnings of difficult times ahead.
I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come.
The Prime Minister has inherited a country in crisis. Energy prices are high, cost of living through the roof, and millions of Brits are expected to struggle this winter. Another worry for Sunak, Conservative Party popularity has plummeted in recent months, sitting approximately 30 points behind the opposition Labour Party. Sunak's supporters say he's economically experienced from his days as Chancellor and praised Sunak as Britain's youngest leader in 200 years and the first ever non-white leader. But his critics claim that's just not enough.
He definitely has the credentials. He definitely has the experience, been there in the, as Chancellor before. But again, we need to understand, you know, where does he sit right here, right now, with everyday voters? He has not been elected by the people, as well as he. Most people feel that he cannot resonate with the ones that are struggling. I'm not sure if it is real representation for anyone of a minority background, especially when he comes from a very, very elitist club, and he does not really represent many. He's probably top 1% of majority of brown people or Asians, whatever you want to call it, in the entire world. So it's very difficult to sort of resonate and feel sort of close in that way.
Many challenges lie ahead for the new Prime Minister, in particular how he's going to overcome Britain's many economic crises. However, even if he does find a way to overcome Britain's economic woes, question marks still remain surrounding if he has what it takes to win the Conservatives the next general election. Robert Carter, London.
Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan has announced a protest march to begin on Friday to call for early elections. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Over 220 organizations have called on the U.S. government to ground F-35 fighter jet program. Campaigners believe that the program is a complete waste of taxpayer dollars that causes harm abroad and at home. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote, prominent anti-war voices including Media Benjamin, Noam Chomsky, Abby Martin, and Roger Waters joined over 220 groups around the world in calling for the cancellation of Lockheed Martin's $1.7 trillion F-35 fighter plane program. The women-led peace group Code Pink is spearheading an international effort to urge Joe Biden and members of the U.S. Congress to cancel the manufacturing and training of the F-35 fighter jet, which has been docked by serious technical and operational problems since it first flew in 2006. I joined over 200 organizations from around the world in calling on the U.S. government to end the disastrous F-35 fighter jet program because, as a global community, we need to drastically change our priorities, Waters, co-founder of iconic Pink Floyd, said in a statement. He added, to the people in the countries the F-35 is sold to and produced in, it's time we demand a reinvestment into life, not war. In a letter to Biden and U.S. lawmakers signed by nearly 230 groups, Code Pink said its cancellation demand is based on the harm caused abroad, cost of the program to the taxpayer, inefficiencies and failures, the environmental impact of F-35s, and the effects training has on local communities. Some of those communities are in Vermont, where, despite railing against the military-industrial complex during his two presidential runs, Senator Bernie Sanders supports the F-35 program. Currently, F-35 training in Vermont disrupts the lives of working-class people, the letter states. The training is irregular, and Vermonters go without warning of when these trainings will take place. The noise caused by the F-35 hits 115 decibels, which especially hurts and injures infants and children, the elderly, and the disabled. The F-35 has 300 to 600 takeoffs and landings a month. Ben Cohen, co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream and a Vermont resident, said that the global community is fed up with overpriced, underperforming weapon systems like the F-35. It's a complete waste of taxpayer dollars that causes harm abroad and at home in Vermont. The only people this project benefits are the executives at Lockheed Martin, Cohen added. Real security is knowing you can see a doctor when you're sick, not a boondoggle fighter jet that can fly near thunderstorms. That's just one of the many problems plaguing the F-35. The warplane's exorbitant cost has also raised critics' eyebrows and ire. According to the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, the F-35 price per unit, including ancillary costs like depot maintenance, ground support equipment, and spare parts, is $110.3 million per F-35A, $135.8 million per F-35B, and $117.3 million per F-35C. Those totals do not include the nearly $1.3 trillion in life cycle cost to operate and sustain the aircraft over its 66-year life cycle, making it the most expensive weapon systems in the U.S. history. Ashik Siddiq, a research analyst for the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, recently noted that canceling all U.S. student loan debt would cost about $1.75 trillion, or about the same amount as the total cost of the F-35 program. Department of Education data shows that amount is also enough to eliminate all tuition at U.S. public colleges for more than 20 years. According to the Children Defend Fund, the projected cost of the program would also be enough to reduce child poverty in the United States of America by more than 60% for the next two decades. The F-35 program is a microcosm of the military-industrial complex. Each year, the U.S. government funnels massive amounts of money into the program while letting places in the U.S. go without clean water for the month or years, said Code Pink National Co-Director Donaka Katovic, adding, sustaining this program for any longer will have detrimental effects on human life and the earth. The website of Morningstar wrote, the latest new piece of U.S. military hardware is estimated to be costing around $1.7 trillion, although costs are likely to increase significantly, according to campaigners. Code Pink said, in a time of economic uncertainty, climate crisis, and the necessity for peace and stability for people and planet, over 220 organizations have joined together in an international campaign to end the United States F-35 program. As the intention of the U.S. is to sell the fighters across the globe, campaign organizations from the United States, Britain, Canada, Mexico, Paraguay, Germany, Spain, Kenya, and Switzerland have signed up in support of the campaign. Ruth Rode, a board member at the Arms Information Center in Germany, said, Germany is looking to buy the F-35 to carry U.S. nuclear weapons stationed here. Not only is this going to be a large, unnecessary financial burden, but also sustains the disastrous, indefensible threat of nuclear war on and from German soil. An International Day of Action is being planned for 2023 to stop Biden, including the spend for the F-35 program in his next defense budget.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us present you a brief but bright gem of an advice from the Holy Prophet's 10th infallible heir, Imam Ali al-Naghi al-Hadi, peace be upon him. The life of this world is a market in which some people gain and others lose.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, breaking the contract and its consequences. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the breaking the contract or promise and its consequences in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Quran or the Islamic teachings, we see that Islam has emphasized on fulfilling and being faithful to the promise. What happens when if someone breaks the promise or the covenant and he does not fulfill it? Therefore, Islam has also conveyed the message that there are some consequences that will happen. From them, it is said in the Quran that فَمَن نَكَسَ فَأَنَّمَا يَنْكُثُ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِهِ, which is that whoever breaks the promise or a contract with someone, therefore he has broken his own personality. He has broken his personality or his self, which means that the damage that the person will see in breaking a covenant is only for himself, and it does not bring any consequences for the others. Why it is so? It is because when we fulfill the covenant, when we fulfill a promise, when we are faithful to it, obviously it builds a trust amongst the people. We become someone who is trustworthy, who is truthful, which are the characteristics of the Prophet as well, of the prophets as well. Even when we see that in the life of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, before he announces his prophethood or being prophet, he was known as the trustworthy person, as a truthful person. He was known as Sadiq and Amin, which shows that even when people never knew that he is a prophet, when he was living amongst the people as an ordinary person, he was known as the most trustworthy and most truthful person in the society. And if someone breaks the covenant, obviously he cannot reach to this destination or to this status. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of breaking the contract or promise and its consequences. We said that when someone breaks his promise or contract, obviously the first consequence that he sees is that he becomes a person who is not trustworthy, and no one trusts that person. Now, this person in the society is just like a person whom neither the friends trust nor the enemies. We have seen many examples in the history, many examples in the history where, for example, when an enemy wanted to attack a country or a place, they put some dispute among the people of that country because they couldn't invade. And when some of those people who were defending their country, they basically betrayed or they broke their promise with the others, and they allowed the enemies to win the war, the enemies have come and they have killed all of them. Why? Because they said that we cannot trust them because they fulfilled their promises. They were never faithful to their brothers. Then how can they be faithful to us? Therefore, these are the lessons that we can even learn from the history. There are many other examples in the history. Therefore, the one who is not faithful, obviously, he is the ones who is not faithful to the promises that he made. He cannot be trusted. Even amongst the family will not trust such a person. The society, neighbors will never trust such a person. The friends will never trust such a person. Therefore, he cannot get a status, a good position, maybe a good job. Why? Because he is someone who never fulfills the promise. He breaks his promises and covenant. Even the being punctual at the work, it is one of the faithfulness to the promise that I promise that I will come to the work in time. But if someone does not reach at time, obviously after some time he will lose his job because they cannot trust him. He has promised to be on time. These are the consequences, basically. When a person is not trustworthy, when a person is not faithful to the contract and the promises, obviously he has to face all these consequences. And at the end, according to the saying of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the hellfire is waiting for such a person. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
A 78-year-old artist is making a comeback with a unique art installation on Governor's Island in the United States of America. One of its biggest features is the sound and creaking of moving chains.
It's a project that I proposed for a commission in St. Louis. The site of the commission was the area near the Mississippi River and the St. Louis courthouse. So I wanted to do a piece that addressed those areas and the subjects. And and of course we have those areas in the Mississippi River, which is a place that you talk about the history of American commerce, but also we can talk about the history of slavery.
Charles Gaines wanted to highlight the role slavery played in building the economy of the United States. That's why he purposely used chains, and the sculptor pointedly faces the Statue of Liberty in New York City. The installation is roughly 30 meters long and activated by colossal chains that rotate on anchors. The installation is part of a three-chapter series called The American Manifest, Moving Chains. It will be kept for all to see until the summer of next year.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine era
mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
A celebrated Chinese artist integrates his life experiences and the beauty of his homeland using his own distinctive style of traditional painting. Chen Jialing is known for his Chinese ink paintings. Chen brings to life the imaginative richness and culture through his depictions of landscape with every brush of color. He is most famous for breaking traditional painting techniques while staying within the framework of the art form. Chen says one of his favorite subjects is the Jianggong Mountains, especially during certain hours when the sunlight offers its own visual delights.
The composition of this painting is based on the main peak of the Jianggong Mountains, because the main peak is the most majestic and imposing, especially at noon. The sun shines on the trees, forming a contour light involving trees and the large mountains, which is extremely beautiful.
The 85-year-old artist has also used fused traditional landscape painting with modern technology. Though Chen has participated in numerous art exhibitions, but he says his first solo exhibit was held in his 70s, and that's when his career really took off. Chen says he plans to paint as much of his homeland's stunning scenery as possible during his lifetime. If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end, It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to afloat. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well. Just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. If you remember, we briefly discussed Imam Khomeini's return from Paris to Tehran. Imam Khomeini's return to Iran accelerated the speed of events so much so that within 10 days after his glorious return, the Islamic Revolution reached its ultimate victory and 2,500 years tyranny was cast for good into the dustbin of history. Just one day before the victory, the regime's last premier, Bakhtiar, announced martial law. But Imam Khomeini ordered the people to pay no attention to the martial law and pour to the streets. This command was the last nail in the coffin of the regime, and the Islamic Revolution triumphed on February 12, 1979.
Thank you.
Imam Khomeini's decision on paying no attention to Bakhtiar's martial law was considered impossible by many scholars and even his near companions. They told the Imam that the decision would result in bloodbath on the streets. However, Imam Khomeini has always put his trust in God and through intercession with Imam Mahdi issued the order. Less than 3 weeks after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini decided to leave Tehran for Qom to supervise the administration of affairs from that holy city while engagement in teaching religious students at seminary. He had decided not to disclose the issue, yet it was disclosed soon. The Imam's daughter, Ms. Zahra Mostafavi, describes the Imam's sojourn at her home. That night, the Imam slept at our home. The next morning, he started walking for 20 minutes in the yard, as it was his habit. I was walking with him too. Our house was adjacent to a two-floor girls' school. While we were walking in the yard, one of the students had seen and recognized the Imam. The news was soon spread across the street and the neighborhood. Very soon, people swarmed on the street to visit the Imam. The next morning, Imam Khomeini left his daughter for Qom. Imam Khomeini arrived in Qom on March 3, 1979, among the fervent people who had gathered to welcome him. The Imam delivered a short speech at Imam Hassan Askari Mosque and went to the house which had been decided for his residence. 2 days later, his wife, Ms. Khadija Saghafi, joined him with some necessary home appliances. During the Imam's residence in Qom, many people from the city and across the country would come to visit him, and Imam Khomeini would go to the roof of the house to answer their pure sentiments. Imam Khomeini had to go up several steps to the roof, and this was worrying as he was around 80 years old. Ms. Saghafi's brother speaks on his sister's concern over the issue. I realized from the behavior of my sister and her remarks that she was concerned about the Imam's frequent commutation to the roof to meet the people. She tried to reduce the commutations because she knew that they were harmful for the Imam at that age. But Imam Khomeini's strong love for the people and his good manners required doing this as much as he could. Later on, when the Imam got heart problem, doctor said that it was the result of his repeated going up and down the steps. Imam Khomeini's wife would try to convince him to reduce his going up and down the steps, but she was not successful.